bit about introducing reliability. I'm going to try and keep the formulas to a very, very small minimum. Actually, I think one crept in someplace, but I just couldn't resist. That's what I like to do. But part of it is I want to take a shot in terms of see if we can get a visualization in terms of what actually is reliability, what it's measuring in there. Take a look at computing a Bayes reliability when the molecular reading values are computed. One of the approaches used quite commonly in the beef industry is to go through and use a Bayesian approach. One of the outputs is it actually comes up with an individual animal reliability. And I want to take a look at where that's coming from. Take a little bit of look at how well it works. A bit in terms of some simulation studies and some actual results from data. And then some of the implications. In a real basic sense, reliability is just a measure of the proportion of variation explained. And you can look at the complement of that, of one minus reliability, is the part that still remains to be explained in there. Now, we can look at how well these are performing through several different measures, including accuracy, reliability, and BIF accuracy. One thing is they're all on a nice 0 to 1 scale, and 0 means the same for all of them, and 1 means the same for all of them. They don't on the intermediate. If you take a look at the formulas, what you find is that if you take a look at just the accuracy, it's going to be bigger than the reliability. And reliability is going to be bigger than the BIF accuracy. Kind of quantify that a bit. An accuracy of 0.7, a reliability of 0.5, and a BIF accuracy of 0.3 are really all in the same thing. The key is you can't just switch from one to the other. I'm going to focus on reliability. There's a couple reasons for that, but in terms of when we take a look in terms of what needs to be incorporated when we're bringing molecular breeding values into a genetic evaluation, it really comes in the form of reliability in there. And I'm going to take a shot in terms of how we visualize in terms of what reliability is measuring. And I'm going to start off and just say that we have two unrelated bulls in which we have no information at all, no pedigree information, no progeny information, we don't have their own information. And what we could do is to go through and make a plot of the possible values of their true progeny differences. Some of those values are more likely than other values. And one of the challenges is that one of those points is the truth. But the question is, which one? And so if we take a look at this graph, what we have along the two axes are for bull 1 on the horizontal axis and bull 2 on the vertical axis. It's a scatter plot. Each of those points represents a possible value of their true EPD. Kind of got a buckshot there. When we go through and we say we run through and get our blood prediction in there, the blood prediction is that little dot in the middle. If we draw a circle around it, and I draw that circle so that it encompasses 95%, so I'm pretty confident that one of the true values is actually in there. I don't know which one. I need to make a decision in terms of which bull I want, which one I would prefer in there. So what I'm going to do is go out and I'm going to collect some additional information. And what I'm going to do is get that big circle, and I kind of debate in terms of whether that's a circle of certainty or a circle of uncertainty. Probably if I get this talk again, I'll change it. If I get it a third time, I'll change it back again. But what we like, that circle certain size, we collect information. What we want to accomplish is to shrink that circle. And we're going to take a look at the case where both those bulls have two high accuracy parents, but no progeny information. So if I take a look at that, so I had the original out there. I collected a bunch more information. I went through, and now I've shrunk down in terms of which values are possible. And there. I still end up with just that one dot in the middle. But now I have two circles. The first one, the one on the outside, and those kind of gray points, which are really hard to see, but believe me, they're there, represents in terms of what the possible values were before I collected any information. Went through, I had two high accuracy parents on both of those bulls. That blue was shrunk. And so from what I had originally, that circle that encompasses 95 of the possible values, once I've added that predator information, I've shrunk that circle. If I take a look at the area of that circle, it is small. It's half the size in terms of area. Okay. That reliability in there is the difference in the proportion between those two circles. The outer circle, which you kind of think of as having an area of one, I shrunk it down and I removed 50% of the area, the possible values in there. And if I went through and I said I want to look at the accuracy at that point, that would be 0.7. If I looked at BIF accuracy, it would be 0.3. It's not that one's better than another, but they're just different measures of the same thing, kind of like changing between pounds and kilograms. Okay, and just kind of summarize that a bit. A reliability of 50% says that I've removed 50% of that uncertainty measured on an area basis. And accuracy, not BIF accuracy, would be taking a look in terms of kind of the radius of that circle, how much I shrank down that radius. If I go through and I say, well, I'm not happy with that, I'm going to collect more information. And there, on the two bulls. And what I want to do is remove 90% of that original uncertainty. What I end up with is a much smaller circle. There's those blue points there. The gray points are what I had originally. We saw things have moved. And then from where they were to begin with. There you go. If I go on through in terms of take a look at the case where I had no information, where I just had pedigree information, and after I've gone through and I've collected a considerable amount of progeny information, I've got to the point that I've got a reliability of 90%, BIF accuracy close to 0.7. I basically end up with three bluffs I moved along. The circle of uncertainty shrunk down. In each of those cases, one of the values was the true value in each of those situations. And there. So as we take a look in terms of reliability, what we can kind of think about is it's trying to cover a measure in terms of how much of the uncertainty that I removed. And if we went back to the reliability of 0.5, we saw that shrunk, but it doesn't look quite as shrunk as we kind of want to think it would be if I just had pedigree information. And there. Now, we kind of go back and say, well, okay, I want to have reliability. We get those. They can be reported. You normally see BIF accuracy. We have pedigree and phenotypic data. At this point, massively cool formulas pop up, but basically we go through and use some fancy math, because under models that we're fitting, we can actually just compute that analytically. We don't have to do anything too terribly fancy. And it's based simply on the true theoretical variance of the true progeny differences given the data. With genomic data, the process we go through is we develop an MVB, practice in terms of the beef industry. We go through and get an estimate in terms of how well it works alone. We saw a lot of those values earlier this afternoon. Okay, what they reported was the correlation, which is basically the accuracy, the biggest of the three numbers in there. If we want to take a look in terms of how much we shrank it, we'd have to go through and square those values. Now, the approaches that tend to be used are Bayesian approaches. And one of the nice things about those is they actually come up with an internal estimate of reliability. We want to know, what's that telling us? Is it telling us what we think it's telling us? Is it telling us something else? So I want to take a look at that. Any genomic prediction starts with pedigree and phenotypic data. I think Sally mentioned in terms of, we still need the phenotypic data, we still need the pedigree data. Genomic data by itself isn't going to get you any place. We go through, we collect genotypes on a subset of animals. We go through and build a model based on the observed genotypes to predict the true progeny differences. And then we take a number of approaches, but one approach is used quite a bit, is one of the Bayesian approaches. I left a black box there, because it depended which letter of the alphabet you wanted to pick. They all have their advocates, and there's other alternative approaches in there. One thing I like is you get more really cool, fancy math and formulas, stuff like that. But for our purposes, the way those Bayes approaches work is to go through and get a sample of possible true progeny differences. Right? At the heart, that's what's going on in the background along with some other stuff. Really what you get is these kind of scatter plots in terms of points. As it goes through, it says, well, this might be it, or this, or that, and so on. Okay. Based in terms of the observed genotypes and phenotypes. That naturally leads to that we can go through and use that information to get a reliability. We can get an estimate of the genetic variance. We can take a look if we didn't have any genotype information, how variable that is. That's just the kind of that original kind of scatter plot that we had. Then for each animal, we go through and we get a prediction in terms of what the true progeny difference is based in terms of that information. We can take a look either by going through and seeing how spread out they are. Take a look, I want 95% of them, and see how wide that needs to be. Or I can go through and kind of take a variance approach, which they use. And for each animal, we're going to get a measure in terms of the variability of its predicted true progeny differences given that information. The better information, the smaller, we can think of that circle being. The less information that it has, the wider that circle is. We can measure that using the variance and just take the ratio and come up with the reliability. And there's some variations on the theme, but that's basically how it works. It's basically kind of making these plots. They don't actually make the plots. Think of it that way. Just taking a look at those areas and see how much it reduces. And it's not the same for all animals. If we take a look at the phenotypic information, the reliability of a phenotypic record is always the same. If we take a look at the genotypic information, what we get is it's not always the same. And so we kind of go through and plot that. We can think about, here's that total genetic variation. Over here, this is the variation in the true progeny differences for a particular animal, pair of animals. We can take a look at the difference in terms of the areas of those two circles. That kind of gives us a measure in terms of reliability. And there. those Bayes models, those linear models that we fit in terms of phenotypic and pedigree, are only an approximation of the truth. If they were the truth, then we'd be done at this point. And we'd just say, that's the answer. And so we want to just take a look in terms of, in essence, how good of an approximation it is. We can take a look at different features of the model. A place we typically start looking at that is use of simulation studies. The advantage of doing a simulation study is you can go through and you can say that I actually know what the truth is. With actual data that's collected, you don't know the truth. You never have the true progeny difference in there. And so I took a look at some simulation studies where we had very simple population structures, looked at different distances from training, and because they're simulation studies, we can go through and directly estimate that true reliability. It's known from other studies that as we get farther from training, that we'd expect the correlation or the accuracy to decrease and so on with the reliability. And so if I take a look at this plot here, along that horizontal axis, I have the Bayes reliability that's coming out of the Bayesian program, so the fancy man. Okay. I can also go take a look on this axis, and what I've done is take a look at for each several different distances from training. Take a look at that, calculated the correlation, squared it, got a reliability directly, and I just plotted the two in there. So if it was something that was perfect, and it was the same sort of reliability that we had, this red line is what we get in terms of the bluff theory. Those points don't fall on it. Actually, in this case, it looks like it might be underestimating the true reliability a little bit. So I look at that and say, okay, that's pretty encouraging. I put my first straw man out. Looks pretty good. The thing is, in terms of when we're incorporating the information, there's a couple other parameters that enter into incorporating into a genetic evaluation. One is the genetic covariance between the MBV and the trait of interest. And I've got two lines because the simulation said I get a pretty good estimates going on along the horizontal axis. Now what I'm taking a look at is a prediction error variance. There's a one-to-one correspondence within a particular trait between the two. And then I go through and actually estimate it based in terms of, at this point, I know the MBV, but I also know the true progeny differences in there. The red line is what I'd expect from the bluff theory. When I take a look at this black line here and these points, at this point for what I would get predicting by taking my mixed model theory is kind of going through and applying the Bayes thing, the actual covariance between the two is actually smaller on a very consistent basis. There's a strong linear relationship in the case that I look at. So I have this structural component coming in. But the association isn't exactly what I want. On the previous one, we looked at the reliability, it looked pretty good. We come here and it's starting to say, well, maybe the picture's just a little bit more complicated than we would like. The other thing that enters into it is the estimated MBV variance. Okay, so the variance in there. And one of the things that you observe is if you go through and you use a panel that was trained for Angus and use it in a completely different breed, you see a shrinkage in the MBV variance. The values tend to be a lot closer to each other. Again, the red line is what I would predict. These values along here, and we again find that with the MBV variance is also shrinking. And then I thought about that a little bit, why is that happening? And I think a large part of that is as we move away in training, what we get is that we don't have the true breeding values, what we have is measures of associations. As we move away, recombination occurs, and that's leading to that shrinkage that we see there. Now, in terms of, I could also go through in terms of the genetic variance of the trait. That's a really boring graph. The numbers are all the same, or pretty close, aside from a little bit of sampling variability. It's not that the genetic variance is changing. The variance of the MBV is shrinking down as we move away in training. Reliability is a ratio. It has that covariance, this variance in the denominator, square root of that, and the other one. And then if we take a look at that ratio, since those both are shrinking, we start coming back up to kind of where we would have expected to be. Okay. What that's telling me is that, just kind of going through and saying, I'm going to treat an MBV reliability coming out from the Bayesian approach as if it's just another reliability, isn't going to work. I have to do a bit more that the changes are actually being reflected in terms of the underlying genetic parameters to different effects. Okay. So we got that larger drop than expected in the MBV variance. Wasn't falling along the red line, was falling below. That drop gets bigger the farther we move away from training. That's going to be the larger prediction error variances. And as I said, that I think that's coming up in terms of that we have recombination occurring. Now, there's a variety of ways in terms of incorporating it, and we talk about blending and correlated trait. There are variations on the theme, and they all involve the same set of parameters. And I think it's a little bit easier at this point just to take a look at blending. I have two pieces of information coming in. I have phenotypic information. We go through and we summarize that in terms of a phenotypic EPD. I have a molecular breeding value that's going through and summarizing the genomic information. I have a set of weights in terms of how much weight I want to give to each one. The weight that we give to the MBV down there becomes less as the reliability of the phenotypic information is greater. I think Larry pointed that out earlier. That we take a look at those formulas, that's not the only thing entering into it. There's also a scale factor that gets multiplied times that molecular breeding value. It involves a ratio in terms of the MBV covariance over that MBV variance. So if I take a look at whether I'm blending or doing a correlated trait approach, it's not going to be enough from what we saw. And there just goes through and say, I'm just going to adjust it based on the reliability. I'm also going to have to include an adjustment on the directly in terms of the covariance and the variance components in there. Now, when we take a look at that, this is probably about the easiest case. I've gone through and I've imposed a structural component. I've moved away, and I actually moved away quite a bit in there. And what we're seeing is that the Bayesian reliability actually goes through and captures that information. And actually, I look at that, and I think, that's doing a pretty darn good job in there. Part of me goes through and say, well, at that point, if I know the structural components that are running into it, maybe I need to work with that directly. What if I go through and take a look at the reliability directly within each of those situations? And so I'm taking, and the structural things can be distance from training. Now, it's easy to say, okay, I'll build that in. Challenges is nobody's actually come up in terms of from an actual set of data how to calculate that exactly. There's lots of different approaches that you could potentially take. but also in terms of structural components, in terms of you've got an animal that's Angus, and you're going through and say, well, he's in the red Angus, and so I'll have his NBB added to the Simmental. You've got three different ones. So you're going through, and it's a different breed that's a structural change as we go through in there. And so I'll go through and use the estimated reliability directly. And so in this case, I still got the four different distances from training. I'm sorry. In this case, the simulation had. Oh, there is four. I was thinking there should be four. Remind yourself to use thicker line widths in the future. Okay? And so if I take a look at one of those lines, that's one distance from training. Except what I did is I broke it up. I went through and I said I took within each of those generations the ones with the quarter with the smallest, and the next quarter, and the next quarter. And if I take a look at those, I'm not seeing that really strong relationship within. Okay? I get different reliabilities within a certain distance from training, but it's not, from what I'm seeing here, it's not really telling me an awful lot. It just kind of bounces around. Looks like I'm getting noise there. And there. And I thought, well, that's all nice and good. Maybe we should take a look in terms of actually going back and taking a look at some actual data in there. This is one of the first ones I look at, and I thought, boy, this is seriously discouraging in there. What I did here is I pulled data across several breeds, several different traits, so there's a scaling going in there. Along the horizontal axis, I got the Bayes reliability, and you can get negative values. I partitioned them up in terms of the smallest, the next smallest, when they each one estimate all the variance components. And so I have this plot here, those reds. That red line is the least square line that's going through it. Okay. It's positive, that's good. It's got a p-value of 0.18. So to me that says is that I'm not really confident in terms of saying there's something actually going on in there. My guess is there is. There's probably not enough information to actually tell. Thought about it a bit more and said, well, maybe, as in the other case, I probably need to be taking a look at the underlying effect in terms of variances and covariances. This is on that MBV covariance. Again, in there. A lot of noise. These are estimated with huge standard errors. But now I'm seeing a much stronger effect, something that somebody could actually take advantage of in terms of building that information to get a better estimate out. That little p equals zero. In the case where, so we usually like maybe cut off at 0.05, this is less than 0.0001. So it's highly significant. I'm very confident that there is that association there, where I wasn't confident that there was anything going on in the other one. I'd have to collect more data before I started believing it. I also did the same thing in terms of the scaled MBV variance. Since I'm going across traits, those need to be scaled. Okay. Taking a look in terms of the association, in terms of a very strong association, a p-value close to zero. Again, different from the other ones. Remember, the other plots were for prediction error variance, and these are for reliabilities. And there. So what are some of the implications in here? Okay. I think it's quite clear, both in terms of simulation studies, but also in practice in terms of when you go through and you take a look at where you can identify different structural components, that where you expect the reliability to drop down, those Bayes reliabilities drop down as you would expect. Okay. That said, Bayes reliability isn't a perfect proxy for kind of the Blunt-based reliability. They're not the same thing. They give us similar sorts of information, but they're not, you can't exchange one for the other. Along with that, that incorporation of an MBV in a genetic evaluation, important things are not just that correlation coefficient, it's also that scale factor coming in, the covariance, genetic covariance between the MBV and the phenotypic trait, and also that MBV variance. And what we've seen is that those are affected, that they do change. What we probably don't want to do is kind of just say, I'll just use Bayes reliability and hope it captures everything. It seems like work in terms of making optimal use of this is we need to start taking a look in terms of building into the models in terms of those structural components. They're not all the same. You see presented that here are the set of correlations, and there's one correlation. As we go through, those correlations do change in there. And so I think what looks real promising is to go through and take advantage of both, you know, figuring out in terms of how we do that. The other thing is we've got this artificial two-stage process. We go through, we train an MBV, we get an estimate of parameters, and then we go through and incorporate the MBV in. Perhaps what we really need to be taking a look at is to say, that's good, but maybe we need to go through and say we need to have a uniform approach. Just go through and it all comes through in a single process, build up in terms of expanding the Bayesian approach, and things that Gordon's taking a look at. At this point, I'll open it up for questions.
Question for Steve.
Study where I'm going through and I wanted to measure distance from training, set up a nice, easy situation where I had discrete generations, at which point genotype everybody in one generation, and then the next generation was one unit farther down, and there. That way I didn't have to figure out how to measure it.
But in an application, we can maybe do something like an average relationship coefficient for an individual to the training population? Or
would they go with the visa? No. An average makes sense, except that in terms of, it would probably be some sort of weighted average, in fact, that not all the animals are contributing, even if they have a genotype, contributing the same amount of information to train.
Right. You know, whether you use the regressive disease.
Right. So if you just had phenotypes, that'd probably be pretty reasonable for making something else. And that's a question for the linear relationship that we're interested in, some sort of nominal relationship.
Very good. Other questions, Steve? All right. Well, thank you. That's fascinating.